Bini, thanks again for joining for Mitzvah of the Week. And we should dedicate our shiur tonight, since Rita Katz is here. Her mother's yahrzeit was on Motzei Shabbos and Sunday. So we dedicate the shiur in memory of Chana Katz. I've noticed over the last few months that something I've been thinking about a lot, something I've been coming back to in some of my shiurim and drushos, is the theme of Emunah. I don't think I intentionally set out to give a whole number of drushas and shirim on Emunah. But in retrospect, I'm realizing that it's been an important theme because the last year has been trying. We've needed a sense of optimism in the sense that times will get better. And it's been on my mind a lot, something I've been talking about. But what I think this time has helped me sort of internalize a lot is just that humongous role that HaKadosh Baruch Hu plays in this world. I'm not one to necessarily preach an emunah that involves we drop everything and we don't do any of our hishtadlus. I think that's important as well. But the notion that everything is in Hashem's hands, a kol bidei shamayim, and that both the good and the bad come from Hashem, but especially the miraculous comes from Hashem. Thought about this a lot, particularly around the vaccine, is really something that has been in my mind and something that I think has been able to help us understand and situate ourselves in what's going on, that we're not in control of the world, but Hashem is. And especially when we see good times, we see the bend of the arc towards the positive. So that's really where we can see Hashem's hand and what's going on, the way Hashem provides for us.
And that's certainly a message that's very relevant to Parshas B'Shalach, as Bnei Israel find themselves stuck at Yamsuf. They think that the Egyptians are going to overrun them, and Hashem splits the sea. They cross over. They believe in God and the servant Moshe. So we have this very climactic Kriyas Yamsuf, the Tamei Mikra, the trope that's used for Shiras Hayam, is dramatic, majestic, and you're looking to say for Torah, and the way the blocking of it is quite remarkable. And then we cross Yamsuf. And it's very interesting what happens from there, because you would think that this faith would last with them for a long time, that Bnei Israel that saw God's presence at Kriyas Yamsuf would have that at least Hakaras Haftov, if not just, again, that very simple understanding of what God's role is in redeeming them. And yet, here's what we find right after the Shira. V'yisa Moshe et Yisrael miyam suf. They went out through the Sea of Reeds. V'yitzul mibar shur. So they leave. They go on to the wilderness of Shur. V'yechu shloshes yamim b'midbar v'lo matzu mayim. They travel for 3 days and they can't find any water. V'yavo marasa v'lo yechu lishtos mayim mimara ki marim heim. So they come to Mara, but they could not drink the water of Mara because it was bitter. Okay, Karash Mamara, and that is why it's named Mara. Okay, so already, whatever the honeymoon was, that is over. And they're complaining, lack of water, life is not as good as they thought it would be. Vayilonu ha'am al Moshe lemor manishta, and they're complaining to Moshe, what are we going to drink? Vayitzak al Hashem, vayorehu Hashem eats, and Hashem. So Moshe cries out to Hashem, and Hashem shows him a piece of wood. So he throws it into the water, and the waters become sweet. So there he made for them a fixed rule, and there he put them to a test. So it'd be very easy to gloss over this last sentence. The waters were sweetened. There was some sort of test, some sort of trial B'nai Yisrael are testing Hashem. Maybe Hashem is testing B'nai Yisrael. And could gloss over that. But these words, Sham Sam Lo Chok Mishpat. So what's the Chok is a rule. Mishpat is also something suggesting trial, judgment, a law. So what's this rule? What's this law that's being put forth here? So Rashi quoting or referring to several sources in Chazal notes that this phrase Sham Sam Lo Chok Mishpat means that Bemar Natan Lahem Miktzat Parshiot Shel Torah Sheitasku Bahem, that at Mara, even before Matan Torah, we're used to thinking that everything starts at Matan Torah, but it actually starts earlier. They're given some things that are going to come up in the Torah. They're already given at Mara. And what are those things? Shabbos, Parah Aduma, V'dinin. So Shabbos, the red heifer, and Dinin. The Parah Aduma, what does that have to do with anything here? So Parah Aduma is the paradigmatic chok, a statute, a law without an apparent obvious reason to human beings. So Parah Aduma is an example of that. Dinin makes sense with Mishpat. And Shabbos is here as well. So how did Rashi come up, or how did Chazal come up with Shabbos being here? So the Siftei Chachamim explains that as it is, Shabbos is going to come up in the next passage. So therefore, it must have been given before Matan Torah. There's also the fact that in the Aseres HaDibros was given in Parshat Bat Chanan. So it says, Sher Tzivi Ticha. Shemor, I'm not going to quote the pasuk correctly. Shamor et Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho Kasher Tzivi Ticha. As was already commanded. So when was Shabbos already commanded? So Moshe is repeating the Dibros. He's not going to say that, well, as it was commanded in the first Dibros, because that would be a little bit redundant. But Rashi suggests there that it's referring back to Mara. So there seems to be evidence that Shabbos is observed or at least commanded prior to Matan Torah. And we'll see to what extent that is. But after this whole episode at Mara, so there's a little more traveling. They go from Elim to Mibar Sin, the desert of Sin. And there is more complaining. Okay, so first it was about water. And now, Vayomer in Pasuk Gimel, Vayomer Alehem B'nei Yisrael, Mitein Mutenu B'yad Hashem B'eretz Yitzrayim, B'shivtenu Al-Sir HaBasar B'chleinu Lechem Masova. He says, if only we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots, when we ate our fill of bread, when we had lots of meat and bread. You took us out here to die of hunger. So first the water is bitter. Now we're complaining that we don't have food, or at least not enough meat. So what's the response here? So Hashem says to Moshe, Hineni mamtir lacham lacham min hashamayim, I am going to rain down a bread from the sky. V'yatzaham v'laktu dvar yom b'yomo. And the people shall go out and gather each day, that day's portion. L'man anasenu ha'ilech b'tzorah ti'im lo. And thereby Hashem is going to test whether we're going to follow the Torah or not. We'll see the relevance of that shortly. But so when it comes to Friday, Sunday through Thursday, they get, you know, one portion every day. There's going to be mount every day. On the sixth day, on Friday, they will prepare whatever has been brought in. It shall prove to be double the amount that they gather every day. So in fact, Shabbos hasn't even been mentioned necessarily here, but they need to have extra on Friday in order that it should be ready on Shabbos. So this episode begins to play out, and then in Pasuk Yutet, Moshe tells people that they shouldn't leave their man overnight on a daily basis. There's no saving, there's no leftovers. You eat whatever you have during the day, don't leave any of it. But they don't listen. They're testing things out a little bit. It's not necessarily normal to be worried about that. So they're thinking, what's the big deal? So they leave it overnight. So it became infested with maggots and it stank, and Moshe was angry with them because they didn't listen to him. So they gathered it every morning, each as much as he needed to eat, for when the sun grew hot, it would melt. So he had to gather it and eat it quickly. So then comes Friday. On the sixth day, they gathered double the amount of food. Two omers for each person. And they ask Moshe about this. And so Moshe says to them, this is what Hashem had told me. Shabbaton, Shabbat Kodesh Hashem Machar. It's a Shabbaton, which is a Shabbat, holy Sabbath for tomorrow. And Asher Tofu Efu, bake whatever you need to bake. And Asher Tevashul Bashel, cook whatever you need to cook. So unlike other days, you're supposed to leave the man overnight, from Friday night to Shabbos, because you're going to have extra. The extra is going to be for Shabbos. And they leave it over, and it didn't. There were no worms. It didn't go foul. And then Moshe tells them, you know, eat this today because you're not going to find anything in the field. You're going to collect 6 days. You're going to go out collecting the man, but on the seventh day there's not going to be any. And then comes Shabbos. Right, so yeah, so whatever Moshe says to do, it's like they're going to do the opposite. So if Moshe tells them, you know, don't leave it over. It's not going to last. They leave it over. If Moshe tells them it is going to last, leave it over. Don't go out collecting tomorrow because there's not going to be any. So they go out and they collect. Right? Anybody who's been in the field of education can relate to this a little bit. So then Hashem says to Moshe, "Ad." How long are you going to refuse to obey my mitzvahs and my Torah? Hashem gave you Shabbos. So therefore, on the sixth day, he's going to give you a double portion of bread for 2 days. Nobody's allowed to leave their residence. They're not supposed to, or not supposed to travel, not supposed to go very far. They're supposed to stay within your residential area. And then they come to rest. They remain inactive on the seventh day. So the part that I'm interested in focusing on is the Shabbos aspect of this. And the Lechem Mishnah aspect of this. So what's Lechem Mishnah referring to? So the pshat of the psukim, the simple meaning of the psukim, is that there was a double portion of man, a double portion of bread on Friday that was going to be used for Shabbos. However, the Netziv explains, why does it say Lechem Mishnah Shnei HaOmer L'Echad? Why does it have to sort of repeat that there's two portions and two omers for one person? So he says, he quotes from the Chilta, "Delecha Mishneh Mashma'u Meshune B'Mar'eh Uvetam." As it is, the man was sort of unusual. The Gemara in Yoma describes, you know, what man tasted like and what it is. But on Shabbos, it tasted even different from that. And that speaks to the power of food on Shabbos. There's a Gemara on Shabbos where there's a conversation, there's a dialogue between the Kesar, the emperor, Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, and the emperor is asking Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, what makes this Shabbos food smell and taste so good? I want some of that. So Yeshua ben Chananya explains that Shabbos itself is the spice, and I can't just give you the spice, but people who keep Shabbos have it, and those who don't, don't. So, I think if you get the right kind of challah, the experience out on Shabbos, that challah just tastes like Shabbos. It's very special. It's something that's delightful. So there's something to be said for this detziv, the Lecha Mishnah, is Meshurim B'Mar Avitam. But obviously the pshat of the pasuk is dealing with the fact that there is going to be extra. And not only do you have to collect it, but you have to have baked it. It has to be ready to go on Shabbos. And Rav Hirsch gives a beautiful overview of what this whole passage is about. I'm giving it to you in English. I actually do have the Hebrew version on Bar Ilan, but as far as I'm aware, Rav Hirsch originally wrote in German, so I'm okay not using the original Hebrew. So this is what Rav Hirsch has to say. I'll read a bit of it inside because I think it's a very powerful piece here. He says, Shabbos doesn't mean rest from exertion. Doesn't denote rest from exertion, right? It's not that you worked really hard and therefore you have to rest. But cessation in the midst of ongoing activity, that even just the mundane routine things that we do to keep things going, we have to stop from doing. So it gives Shabbos related to all these different words, all of which denote putting something in the place or condition that is fitting for it. The Shovet, the person observing Shabbos, the person who's refraining, withholds his hand from things to which hitherto he had administered change of form or condition. As far as he is concerned, they have already attained their proper form and condition. There's nothing else to do. However incomplete the things may be in themselves, as regards the periods of Shvitah, he has already finished his work on them. From a subjective standpoint, as regards the mission entrusted to him, his work always reaches completion, provided that he invests in it all his energy and sincere service of God. As the Torah tells us that we're supposed to work 6 days, so you work 6 days, you do put all of your energy that you're supposed to put in, but once Shabbos comes around, you're done. No matter, even if you're not actually done, you're done. If, right? The journey is the song, it's time to say good Shabbos because all your work is done. Right? If God summons him and he passes away in the midst of uncompleted work, as far as he is concerned, his work is completed. This is one aspect of the idea of Shabbaton, cessation of work on the part of Jewish man on the seventh day, as is required here. And it goes on to say that Shabbos had been in existence long before. When was Shabbos created originally? It was created at Bereishis, at the very beginning of the world. What is new here is the concept of Shabbaton, celebration of Shabbos through man's ceasing from all work. So hence, in our verse, Shabbaton is placed in an emphatic position before Shabbos. So what Rav Hirsch is explaining is that, yeah, God had been observing Shabbos. There had been the concept of that God rested on the seventh day. That existed. But what's new here is the concept of Shabbaton, that a human being stops working. And not just because, you know, you work so hard and you're tired, you need to take a break. But the idea that there's just a point where whatever you've done is complete and you don't need to do anything else. You leave it exactly as is. That's what Shabbaton is the idea that we leave things as is. He says, at the time of the law giving at Sinai, the Sabbath will be instituted in its full scope, which includes all the creative activity of man. Here, it is introduced in respect to man's activity in seeking his livelihood and preparing his food. Through the Shabbaton and his sphere of activity, Jewish man will subordinate himself to God, initially in seeking his livelihood, as the instinct of survival is the first and strong incitement to subdue the world. Just as the Sabbath of God impresses on the world the seal of free divine creation, the Sabbath of man impresses on man's creative work, on his activity in subduing the world, the seal of divine authority. Through the Sabbath, man dedicates himself and his work to the service of God. So what Shabbos is about, in addition to just, you know, the idea of stopping what we're doing and leaving it put, that we serve Hashem in that way. And this is brought out very well by another part. There's towards the end, it says, people shouldn't leave on Yom HaShvi'i. So this is the source for the prohibition of Trum, of going beyond the Trum, of beyond going 2,000 Amma on Shabbos from the municipal limits, if I could translate it that way. So Sefer Chinuch explains there that the purpose of that mitzvah is to remember that the world was created, wasn't eternal, God created it. So Cain, least Cordova, Rai Lanushan and Nuh Bemakomachai, we rest in one place. Klomar Shalon Elech Bederch Rachok Rak Derch Tiova Oneg. We don't go travel far away. Right, so going a certain distance, if you do it for pleasure, That's not a lot of burden. But that also brings out the idea that that the original Shabbos that Bnei Yisrael are observing here is a Shabbos. It's not necessarily about the Lamed Melachos and about creative labor, but it's about fundamental. But even before you get there, it's about fundamentally understanding that the way things are on Shabbos is how God intended them to be, and you let it go. You don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to do anything. You just leave things as they are. You leave yourself as it is. So that's a very important foundation here of what's going on. That the collecting of the Lechem Mishnah on Friday, it's about recognizing that when Shabbos is going to come, everything is going to be as is. You prepare it beforehand, and everything is good as is. And the Rav beautifully elaborates this, on this aspect of preparing before Shabbos. So he says, unlike Yom Tov, the holiness of Shabbos is independent of any declaration of the court. Right? Shabbos comes no matter what. When the seventh day of the week comes, it's Shabbos. However, Shabbos is still related to man's preparation during the week. This preparation solidifies its holiness. The essence of Shabbos is based on these verses. It is a day for which we must prepare. And that's what he says Muktzah is about also. We don't move things around because things are left the way they are. But in order to leave things the way we are, we have to prepare for them, right? So in some ways, what this is kind of getting at is that Erev Shabbos is really the first mitzvah of Shabbos. That before you even get to Shabbos, you have to have gone out and collected your man, you have to prepare for Shabbos. And that, the Rav saying, that's really what Shabbos is about. Ein kedusha b'li hachana, that without having prepared properly, then you're not able to observe Shabbos. You see this also, this will transition us well into the halachic aspects of what Lecha Mishnah is. And it's perhaps no coincidence that the Gemara, in mentioning Lecha Mishnah as a halacha, brings up the point, La'olam yashkim adam lehotzah Shabbos. Person's supposed to wake up early on Friday. Okay, so especially if you're in Israel, so Friday is Sunday, you don't go to work, so maybe you think they get a place, nowhere to go, but no. On Erev Shabbos, we have to get up early because there's a lot to do for Shabbos. We have to prepare for Shabbos. And that's based on the pasuk from our Parsha, right? You have to prepare everything and you have to do it early. You have to do it immediately. So then the Gemara goes on to tell us, and here's where we get into some of the halachas of Lecha Mishneh, of the fact that Bnei Yisrael had the extra man, the double man that they collect on Friday. That has implications for how we observe Shabbos. So Amar Rabbi Abba, Shabbos chayv adam lifso al shtei kikarot. When on a Shabbos, a person is required lifso. So lifso can mean to cut. Barashi translates that as simply that you're making hamotzi. You're making hamotzi on two loaves of bread. Al shtei kikarot. Dichtiv lecha mishnah, because the Torah tells us about lecha mishnah. Amar Rav Ashi chazina le Rav Kahana denaka tarte vatzachada. Rav Kahana would take two loaves of bread and you would cut one of them, because amar lak tu ktiv. So you have to have collected two, but you cut into one of them. You use one of them at each meal. Rabbi Zera hava batza kula shirute. He would cut all the challahs. We'll see what that means in a second, but it sounds like, according to Rashi, actually, that he cut a big piece that was sufficient for the whole meal. Sufficient for the whole meal. So Ravina says to Ravashi, tanuta, make somebody look like they are gluttonous. That you have to have this huge piece. What's that about? So the answer is that since you don't normally have challah on this level, you don't have these big pieces of challah, you don't have lecha mishnah, the whole thing is different on Shabbos. So that distinction makes it clear that it's not for gluttonous purpose, but it's for the purpose of covered Shabbos, for Suda Shabbos, and the like. So we have going on in the Gemara is a requirement to have lecha mishnah, but the question sort of is, to what extent do you have to use the Lecha Mishnah? How does this requirement play out? So the Rashba, when it comes to Rabbi Zera, who would Rabbi Zera, who would break off the piece that would suffice for the whole meal. So he doesn't like that interpretation of Rashi. He says, why would it be gluttonous to have a piece that would suffice for an entire meal? He says, Adarabba, kol shehu mar b'chaticha havei ayin yafa. It's a good thing to have a big slice. Of challah. I remember that when I was a rabbinic intern at a shul, I was eating. I believe it was on Shavuos night. I was eating at the home of the rabbi, and they had a two-year-old who, at some point during the meal, started shrieking. Normally, a very calm child, but he started shrieking. I want a big piece. He would not let up. Of course, there was no challah left at that point, but from the mouths of babes, Rashba is saying that it's appropriate to serve your guests a big piece. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. That's not gluttonous. But what Rabbi Zera meant is that he cut into all the loaves of bread. That however many loaves of bread, where there's two, even if it was, sounds like if it was three or four, so you use all of them. So whereas Rav, there's different versions here. So our version says it's a where am I? Rav Kahana. So Rav Kahana only cut into one of them, but it sounds like Rabbi Seira is saying that you should cut all of them. And this is what the Gra says, the Vilna Gaon says, based on the Marshal and the Shla, that you cut both challahs like the Rashba says. So not only do you have to have two loaves, but you should cut into both of them. And in fact, in the Maase Rav and in the Sefer that describes the practices of the Vilna Gaon, it says that one time they put many challahs in front of him and he cut all of them. So he's understanding Rabbi Zera that way and follows Rabbi Zera that you should cut into all the challahs. However, the Rashba notes that there's an idea with Shabbos in general that you have double of normal. You actually start with the Diyav Neshama Yitera, the extra soul. Everything with Shabbos is double. Right? Two lambs that are sacrificed, Lecha Mishnah, Zachar V'Shamor, lighting two candles. So there's this idea of having double on Shabbos, which makes it seem like from here that you're just doing double what's normal. So if you would normally, I guess in theory, there was one piece of manna that was collected in the desert, so you only need two on Shabbos. So maybe at most you're cutting into two of them. However, Rashba also brings up another issue that comes to Shal Shudas. Right, so let's say I have Lecha Mishnah for Friday night, Shabbos day, and Shal Shudas. So what was it like in the desert? You got you had two loaves on Friday and two loaves for Shabbos. Right, you have one for before Shabbos. Right, let's say because you have enough for two meals for a day. So you have two loaves on Friday, two loaves on Shabbos. Which would mean that, you know, you have your first one Friday before Shabbos, then you have three left. So on Friday you can have Lecha Mishnah for two, Shabbos day you can have Lecha Mishnah for two, but you only have one left for Shal Shudas. And so this is what the Rashba brings up in a tshuva, and he says the Rambam, I assume it's referring to the Rambam, would have two loaves, but if you only have one, then that would be sufficient. And in fact, he points out, in the desert, they really only had enough for one. So he says at the end, he says at the end, quotes the Rush, that you only cut into one of the loaves at each meal. And that's what they would have done in the Midbar, which means that one, you know, you'd have left for Shalosh Shodes. And points out that you know, this is also you know, signifies the fact that it didn't go foul on Shabbos, but the idea being that at Shalosh Shodes, you need to have enough for Shalosh Shodes. So you have two loaves on Friday night, two loaves Shabbos day, but you only cut to one, so that way there's enough left for Shalosh Shodes. The Ritva sort of takes issue with this approach, in that that even though we're commemorating the man in the desert when we do Lecha Mishnah, you don't have to do it exactly the way it was done in the desert. So therefore, you have Lecha Mishnah at each meal. And so it's not that it's not the same that, you know, that, oh, if you cut that when it comes to Shal Shodas, that there are only that there was only one left for Shal Shodas in the desert. You still have Lecha Mishnah at Shalosh Shodes as well, and this is what the Shulchan Aruch paskins when it comes to Shalosh Shodes, that we don't make kiddush. About tzarich libtso al shtei kikaros, you have to have two loaves at Shalosh Shodes. So the Ramah writes that even if you have many meals on Shabbos, you have to make sure that you have two loaves at every meal. So if you want to have five meals, fine, but you have to have Lecha Mishnah at all of them. But at the very least, when it comes to Shalosh Shodes, you should have at least one. And therefore, Mizeh Pasha Amin Haglahakel Liftso Besashashi Rak Bekikar Echad Shalem Ava Yishach Ber Likach Shnein. So Ramah says that the custom became to only use one loaf at Shalosh Shodes, and there's precedent for that again based on the Reshba, that's really what took place in the Midbar, that they only had by the time you went through. If you have two for Friday, two for Shabbos, you only have one left for Shal Shodes. But nonetheless, it's good to be machmir and to use Lecha Mishnah. And this is what I tried to do when we had Shal Shodes in Shul. I would try to make sure that I'm making, you know, I'm obviously only having one roll, but I tried to make sure that I am. There's an extra roll lying around that I can make motzi on those two rolls. Right, so I don't just have the one roll at my seat, but I tried to sort of combine them with another roll. Now, do you have to? We were discussing before. Do you have to cut both challahs? So Shulchan Aruch says that motzei al shtei kikarot shlemot. You have to have two loaves when you're making a motzi. So you're holding both of them, but you cut the bottom one. You cut the bottom one, which makes it sound like you only have to cut one of them. And the Ramah says that specifically on Friday night that you cut the bottom one. On Shabbos day, you cut the top one. The reason for this is al derech Kabbalah. So if the Ramah's not going to explain it, I'm certainly not going to explain it. I'm not sure what the entire inyan is here. But it seems like that according to Shulchan Aruch, you only have to cut one of them. Mishnah Berurah explains that when it comes to Lecha Mishnah, it just says that they collected extra. It doesn't mean that you had to cut into both of them. So you notice that there was the custom of the Gra and the Shlah to cut into both. But he says, "V'olam nagin k'Shulchan Aruch, you only have to cut into one of them." Does everyone have to taste from the Lecha Mishnah? That's the question that gets asked. So when it comes to Kiddush, it was considered to be sufficient for one person to make Kiddush, and as long as you heard Kiddush and you ate something, so that would be sufficient. But not necessarily everybody has to taste Kiddush. This is discussed in the Gemara Pesachim and in Tosos there, in Rashbam there. However, when it comes to, so Chaim Brisker said that this is like Kiddush, not everybody has to take the Lecha Mishnah, but the Mishnah Berurah, and this is what we generally, as far as I know, this is what we follow, that it says that if So if not everyone has their own chalas in front of them, you have to taste from the one that the person making motzi cuts into. So everyone ideally should try to taste. Now, are women obligated and in Lecha Mishneh. So first of all, worth pointing out, the women are chayav in shalosh sudot, even though it's a mitzvah asis shes ban grama. And the Maharama Rannenberg says it's because women were included in the miracle of the man, and Lecha Mishneh affected everybody who was there. So we have a general principle that any miracle that affects the Jewish people, including women are obligated in it, even if it is a positive time-bound mitzvah. So therefore, women have to eat shalosh. So therefore, women have to make motzi with Lecha Mishneh. Now, the Ran explains that you don't even need that reason because as it is, men and women are equal on the mitzvahs of Shabbos because we have Zachar and Shamar. So etche yeshno b'shmira, yeshno b'zchira. Since women are obligated to follow any negative commandments, so women are not allowed to do malachot, they are thereby obligated to do all the positive aspects of Shabbos, including Kiddush, and therefore it would seem like this would apply to Shal Shabbos as well, Lecha Mishneh. So Mishnah Berurah brings down both of these ideas that both because of the Nes and because women are equally obligated in elements of Shabbos. So women have to have Lecha Mishneh and women should have all three meals. So that's what we have. So halakhically, we have to have, so based on the way that B'nai Yisrael observed Shabbos in the Midbar because of the miracle of the man. So we have Lecha Mishneh, should ideally have two loaves at every meal, including Shal Shabbos. But you only really have to cut into one of them. You don't need to cut into both of them. Okay. So I just want to end off. With just a little bit more of Hashkafa. Hashem gets upset with Moshe that they tried to go out collecting collecting man on Shabbos. So the Ruach Chaim HaKadosh says, "Kibatzino lehem she'avra al shtei mitzvos." They transgressed two mitzvos. Number one, that originally they weren't supposed to take more than they were told to take, and they did. Bebeit she'amar lehem tilkitu v'yom ha'shvi lo yeh bo halakita ve'avra v'yatzu lil kot lazeh. And then, so both, again, as I said before, at one point they weren't supposed to collect extra and they did, but then when they weren't supposed to go out and collect on Shabbos, they did that also. So he says, so the reason why Hashem says, why they're rejecting my mitzvahs and my Torahs v'torotai, because there are two Torahs here. Echa ki aya amar lahem she'il ketu, Omer goes to him, luck to Yoser. They got more. The base shalohem minu b'mamar Hashem. This is the one part I wanted to get at, that they weren't listening to. They didn't have faith in what Hashem said. They weren't believing him. Ki b'yom haShabbos lo yiyebo v'yitzu. In lecha over al Torah kazeh she'inu mamim b'toras bo she'avdo. And if Hashem says something and Moshe says something and you're not listening to it, that shows that you don't believe in God. And that's the greatest transgression. So, what this whole parsha here is developing is you go from Yam Suf, where you have Vayimun Hashem and Moshe Avdo, that the peak belief in Hashem and in Moshe his servant, and then they start to complain about the water. They're complaining about the bread. They're not listening to Hashem's instructions. And the test that when Hashem says I'm going to test them and see if they keep my Torah or not, this is the test. This is a test of faith that even in the moment where it's not Kriyas Yam Suf, just a daily life, if Moshe conveys a message from God, can you have faith to listen to it? And Rav Hirsch again ends off with this beautiful comment of his. He says, "He who seeks his livelihood on Shabbos against God's will thereby denies that it is God who sustains and supports him. He demonstrates a belief that he can support himself without any reference to and even against the will of God, and that his sustenance and subsistence depend not on God's goodwill, but solely on his own efforts and on the means available to him by the laws of nature. He thinks that he only has to seek in order to find, only in order to possess, only to possess in order to be happy, and that none of this depends on God. So the message that the monk is trying to create, the message that the first Shabbos is trying to create, right? It's not incredibly ambitious, but just this idea that you can let things go and that God depends on you. And yeah, sometimes we have to put in our own efforts, but it's not solely on our own efforts. But there comes a moment where we have to be able to listen to the voice of God, right? So then he goes on to say, a Jew who seeks his livelihood on Shabbos turns his back entirely on God and on compliance with his will. He has no master other than himself, and he breaks the bond between himself and all of God's will. So what we're getting here is that, yeah, we might have sometimes to seek and to find on our own, but when push comes to shove, can we let the world be as it is, the way we left it, and trust that when God tells us he wants us to do something, it's in our best interest, that God is taking care of us, and God knows what's in our best interest, and that extra thing that we think we need to do, we can let it be. That's the message of Shabbos. So, inasmuch as this is mitzvah of the week, Lech HaMishnah is not necessarily an entirely separate mitzvah on its own. It's part of the mitzvah of Shabbos, but it's part of the original Shabbos. It shows what the essence of Shabbos is all about, that we're supposed to prepare for it because there's in Kedusha B'li Achana, that we can't appreciate the Kedusha of Shabbos without having prepared for it, without having collected the man. The message is, I can desist for one day. I am not indispensable. My work is not indispensable. That's ultimately what shows our emuna, that we're able to give up a little bit of that control that needs to do. That's the message of Shabbos. And as I said at the beginning, I think a message